Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. We're finally, after a couple of weeks of a break, we're circling back to season 15. This will be our last episode, our last main episode, before we go into our holiday break. We're taking the week off for Christmas. I am joined today by Molly Ribble. Some of you guys might know her as Molly Davis, right? Is that your Facebook name?
Yeah.
Yep. As Molly Davis in the fan group. Molly has graciously agreed to come on and have a conversation with me about, you know, from the perspective of someone who's not convinced of Jody's innocence. From our pre-show conversation, she hasn't said that she's, you know, fully convinced of Jody's guilt either, but she was willing to come on and share her thoughts. Before we get started, one thing I do want to say is keep in mind, through comments on the fan page and, you know, things that whatever, after this episode airs, that what Molly's doing here is it takes a lot of guts for anybody. It's a whole different thing besides being on social media talking and coming on and actually opening yourself up to this kind of audience and criticism and everything else. So I want everybody to remember, whether you agree or disagree with Molly, wherever you're at, please keep that in mind in your comments. Let's all just be kind, whether on either side, whether we agree or disagree. And I'm hoping we have a really productive conversation. So first and foremost, Molly, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and do this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being on. This is exciting.
Yeah. Do you want to, I guess, first of all, do you want to share a little background? I don't know anything about you other than your
sure.
Facebook stuff. So what do we know about Molly?
So I think one of the reasons I've listened for a long time, but I feel especially connected to this case because I live in Philadelphia in a neighborhood called East Germantown.
Okay.
Which actually has almost identical demographics to Benton Harbor.
Oh, really?
So as far as population size, as far as I looked it up, we have a higher murder rate than Benton Harbor. So that is different, and we're part of a city, which is different, but size, square footage, poverty levels, crime, all very much match with Benton Harbor. So I appreciate you doing a season about, you know, something so recognizable to me as far as life goes. So I guess the perspective that gives me is that I definitely hear all the time about people getting railroaded, corruption, all sorts of issues. There have been a couple of things that I think Rabia did on Undisclosed about Philly, where lots of people were overturned, we're living a very similar situation to what Jody was dealing with in Benton Harbor. So yeah, so like you said, I would not have said guilty if I was on the jury, because I just feel very unsure of what happened at all. Mm-hmm. But I also do not feel confident that we know that Jody is innocent with what I know. And I know you know more than you've revealed. So I can't speak to that, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a whole, there's a few things that I'm kind of required right now to hold back, but just from what's out there, I think the best way to, can I ask you too, what you do for a living?
Oh, I'm a social worker. So I work at a Temple University hospital. So that's the other thing is besides living here, I spend my day listening to people try to get things out of the government, tell me stories that vary in accuracy about how to get different things out of the government. So kind of in this 24/7, I guess, to an extent.
So did it resonate with you? Just going back to you explaining about kind of, you know, where you live and the areas you live. You know, way back at the beginning, when we had the historian on that was talking about Benton Harbor, he mentioned that, you know, that this circumstance exists in other parts of the country. What's unique to Benton Harbor is its own city, where in most places, it's a part of a city. And that seems to be very similar to what you have there.
Yeah, exactly. And we're dealing with the history of redlining and the fact that people couldn't buy houses and couldn't get good mortgage rates for decades and decades and decades here, for sure.
Great. So, I mean, just based on our conversation, because throughout the season, we've had a couple interactions back and forth on Facebook. You seem very well organized and read up on where your opinions come from. So I was going to kind of turn it over to you and let you kind of, we'll kind of go through point by point, however you want to lead the conversation, and we'll discuss, you know, where your concerns are with the case, what you feel strongly about or not. And I'll leave it up to you to guide where we go from here.
Great. Yeah. And I want to say I'm not the best at names. So if there's stuff that I'm saying that is like just wrong, definitely want to know that. Or if there's other stuff I've forgotten that goes against it. These are just the things that have stuck out to me so far.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. You know, one of the big things that you have always said is when you look at the story, it should get, when you research the story, right, it should get clearer and clearer. It should make more and more sense. The mistakes should become more and more obvious on the prosecution side, right? So to me, this is a different kind of season because it seems like both sides kind of fall apart the more that we look at them. So definitely what the prosecution is saying makes very little sense, but you know, White clearly did a terrible job as the defense attorney, and Jody has had some changes in their story, right? Because we started out the season with not being sure Jody was involved in the robbery, and then it becoming clear Jody was involved in the robbery. So part of what I'm struggling with is just like, I just feel like we're trying to cross a river and everything we step on, just like the log just like falls in the river. And then we try to find another log and we just like, it just, there's nothing that feels like really set.
Yeah.
Are you having that feeling as well?
Yeah. It's a tough case because as I said a few times, like everybody's lying, including Jody originally. I will point out that as far as like Jody with the robbery, the first time I ever asked Jody about the robbery, Jody told me about their involvement. So like for me, like as far as like my investigation with Jody, it wasn't like I asked Jody about it and they said, oh, I wasn't involved, and then later came clean. It's like when we got to that point and I started going through
early on episode where you were talking about, what's the name of it, Tether, I think, the fact that they were getting off of the ankle bracelet, and how could they have done this because the robbery was during the time they were on the ankle bracelet.
Well, we were speculating about that, and part of the issue was right about that time Jody's unit was on lockdown, so I couldn't speak with Jody for several weeks. So we were looking at, you know, as we do, like you mentioned, generally what I say is, you know, when you have the prosecution's case, as we start putting a microscope on it and looking closer, if they have the right person, generally that gets stronger. It certainly doesn't crumble apart. And so as we're starting looking at details, I started, okay, well, wait a minute. According to this witness, Jody might have been on Tether at the time. Perhaps the Tether should have been able to track where they're at. And that's actually where the conversation kind of, when I finally was able to get a hold of Jody again, you know, I asked about that. And Jody's like, no, I got off that a couple of days before. Also, by the way, I was involved in the robbery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that definitely makes the Tether make more sense. It seems like somebody would have just arrived during the robbery if their Tether was alarming.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because they would have been, you know, out of where they were supposed to be. But yeah, to be clear about that, we did find out that was kind of the whole reason, as Jody said, they were out that night was because they had gotten off Tether a couple of days before that.
Okay. I mean, I think, unfortunately, we're going to have the timesheet conversation, which I know is your least favorite conversation.
Well, it's, you know, I'm happy to have a conversation about it. It's so difficult on like social media because like you sit there, you know, Especially like I have people, they're, you know, there's a particular person I think off the top of my head that is like, we tend to argue about it a lot, but it's, they seem to be in a very different time zone than me. So it'll be like, I wake up at 6 a.m. and they put together this long post and I reply. And then it's like 12 hours later when they get it and they reply. Yeah. So I'm happy to have like kind of a back and forth discussion and conversation about it. So let's do it.
So timesheet concerns me for a lot of reasons. It does not concern me that it's handwritten. I had jobs in that era, handwritten timesheets. That part doesn't concern me at all. The stuff that does concern me is, first of all, that we couldn't figure out, there was the break for the anger management class, but it didn't seem to line up with, there was a discussion about this, and I'm not remembering the details, about there's like too many clock ins and outs was one issue.
I don't have it in front of me, but I okay. might pull it up to see it, because what I was remembering was Jody clocked in the morning.
Right.
Clocked out and then clocked back in and then back out again. Is that, are you looking at
that
it in front of you?
That's fine. I don't have it in front of me. So if you had the ability to show it, that would be super helpful. Or I'm sure it's on your website somewhere. So that's just confusing. I'm also just very confused about when it got into what file. So when you're talking about your file, because you got a file from Rabia, right?
So, no, I got a file from Rabia sent me some stuff, but she had gotten it from a woman named Jacqueline Williams.
Okay.
Who Jacqueline Williams is a woman from the Detroit area who's been kind of like a case advocate. I'm not exactly clear on exactly what Jacqueline does. She's actually in our Facebook group. And so, and she's told me she's kind of waited to engage till we kind of get to the end with people. But Jacqueline is the one that sent it to Rabia. And then Rabia, she investigated it for like a year, worked on it for like a year, and just was not able to like commit the time to it. So she sent it to me. And then Jacqueline had some digitized files that she had sent to Rabia, but she had a giant banker's box of like the trial transcripts and stuff. So she actually drove all the way over here. Zach actually went and met her and got the big banker's box full of files. So that's where most of it came from.
And that was from a FOIA, or that was from the, like the defense attorney, or
we think it came from the defense attorneys, and we'll have to ask Jacqueline to get a better idea, because it's one of these situations where it's been so many years that it's like this box of files has been passed from person to person to person to person over the years until it landed with me now. But based on like there's some appellate documents in there, the trial transcripts were in there. There were no police files in there, which was one of the biggest frustrating parts, because if it came from an appellate attorney, then we would expect to have like the full discovery in there, but the discovery is not in there. And then even there were like, for example, with Sonia Lucas, I was looking, there was a transcript of her in like a pretrial hearing where they were talking to her about her dying declaration story. But it was like the pages where she really got in are just missing, and no one's noticed, because nobody's dug through it the way that we dig through it here.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm going through, and it's like she says, and then they're asking her, so what happened next? And then you've turned the page and it's two pages later, and the part we're looking for is gone. So I don't know if like an attorney had pulled that out. Jody did just give me the name of their appellate attorney that took the case on appeal. And it was, she was here in Michigan. She did the appeal and then she took off and moved to like Florida. So I'm trying to track her down to see if maybe it's doubtful.
Yeah.
But maybe that she still has the original discovery.
Yeah. Cause I guess where I'm confused is, it sounds like, cause I know then you did a FOIA and you got different stuff, which is obviously a problem.
Well, I did a couple FOIA. So there was no police files in what Jacqueline had.
Right.
There was nothing, no police files at all. So yeah. So I went through the whole FOIA process with McGinnis and with the Benton Harbor Department of Public Safety. They said, oh, they completely shredded the file. They don't have it anymore.
Right.
Then they gave me this original murder book, which was supposed to be the original investigative file. But at the same time, I filed a FOIA with the prosecutor. Well, first I went to the district court, because generally, and apparently not in Michigan, but I've never worked in Michigan before, even though that's where I live.
Yeah.
Other states, the district court maintains all of the trial exhibits. In Michigan, that's not the case. They are kept with the prosecutor, and the prosecutor sends them back to the agency. So they didn't have that, but I went ahead and filed the FOIA, and they gave me everything they did have, which included their copy of the police file. And those were where the differences came in. There were some subtle differences. So like in McGinnis's original murder book, there's no timesheet. But in the prosecutor's file, that is the copy of that murder book, the timesheet was in there.
Right.
Right in the middle of it, right where it should
be. We don't know what the case review unit has, right?
I do know what the case review, because most of it I sent to them. Yeah. So I mean, they've got
that whole thing about how they said they didn't own the file, had been destroyed, but somehow they had managed to send it to the case review unit despite not having it.
Yeah. Well, that's the big question, right? So right. I believe what they sent to the case review unit, what McGinnis sent, would be the same thing that he sent to me, which is this original murder book. But when I first contacted the AG's office, they didn't have the prosecutor's file. They were in the process of like getting all this stuff. And they still went through, because I've had a few conversations with them, and it's kind of a one-way street, right? I give them information. They don't tell me what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than, you know, they said that, you know, go ahead and send us what you have. We're filing our own for you because we want to make sure they line up, that they're giving you the same thing they're giving us. But that was for me when I got... There was a couple noticeable differences when I got the file from the DA's office. So one of them was, obviously, the timesheet was in the police file section of the prosecutor's.
Right.
And it wasn't in McGinnis's. And then the other big one was McKinney's report was edited. And that was, you know, that was a glaring, and there could be more, but that one jumped out at me because that was a big thing, right? We're talking about the time of the murder.
Right.
He's got this whole thing where he says he interviewed Victoria Miles. He interviewed her at 12:30. And then in the report that the police sent to the prosecutor, that entire section of the report was gone. It was edited out of it, not redacted, but edited out of it. So that those were some of the differences we had between the two.
Right.
And there was also things like, for example, like Jamaica Jones's interview. Uh-huh. That wasn't in the original murder book, but it was in the murder book copy that was held at the prosecutor's office.
Okay. So the banker's box, the Jacqueline Williams stuff, the Robbia stuff, did that have the timesheet in it?
Yes, it was in there.
Okay. So the timesheet was everywhere besides the McGinnis version. Is that right?
Yeah. And it was in the banker's box. There was a copy of it in, I believe it was through one of the appeals. I'm trying to remember where it was at, like in the folder, but it was a copy. So it was like a black and white photocopy. Whereas the one that's up on our website, the one that the prosecutor, where they scanned it, it's color. That was a scan of the original that came from the prosecutor's office. The one that was in that file was a photocopy.
Okay. I guess where I'm concerned is that it seems like there's different versions of corruption that lead to different answers. And it's not clear to me which we're dealing with, basically, right? So like, it seems like, and maybe this is not right, it seems like Jacqueline Williams stuff could involve appellate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So either McGinnis took the timesheet out and didn't give it to you, right? Or the McGinnis people, right?
Right.
And that's why it's not in the McGinnis version. Or it got added later, and that's why it's in the prosecutors and not, and the Jacqueline Williams and not in the McGinnis.
Yeah. And I think I've never quite understood. That's why I'm glad we're having this conversation. I've never quite understood where people were coming from with that.
Yeah.
And I think from a listener, Joni, I think is her name, has talked about that. And it seemed like what she was getting at was that like somehow Jody like came up with this timesheet and then like somehow put like got that into the prosecutor file after the trial or something.
Right. So I don't think that Jody may have faked the timesheet. I don't know. But I don't think Jody had to fake the timesheet. And you had Sean, was it, verify the signature?
Yeah.
So I'm happy to believe the timesheet is real. I'm just not clear on, because the other thing that concerns me is there's part of the trial where Jody says, how could this be? I have a timesheet to give you to the prosecution.
I think they said, I have a timesheet for you, or I have a timesheet right here, or something like that.
There's some phrasing like that, but the phrasing isn't, and maybe this is just getting hung up on phrasing, but the phrasing isn't, look, you already have my timesheet. How could you possibly say this? Right?
Right.
So that combined with it being so confusing when the timesheet got entered has left me wondering whether the timesheet was produced later as part of an appellate thing or just later being like, come on, this is clear, which would...
It gets confusing too,
Right.
Because then, like, in the later after the trial, there's a letter that's like within like the appeals documents where Ernie White said he had never seen a timesheet. But Renfro, right, Jody's original attorney, said he does recall a timesheet. So was the attorney before. So it's like where,
okay, which
White doesn't surprise me because I don't, because to me, I don't, it seems
think White did any work.
No, I don't think White actually knew the case, yeah, file at all. So it could have been, right, in there and didn't know about it. And so, yeah, I don't know what Jody meant by that. As far as like what happened with the timesheet or how it got there,
mm-hmm,
I've kind of just punted that off and have been like, it doesn't really. The thing is, so like the people that are working on the case right now, the yeah, attorneys at General's, yeah, Conviction Integrity Unit, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care if it's ineffective assistance of counsel. They don't care if it's a Brady violation. They only will work a case on the basis of actual innocence.
Right.
So like they're like, it doesn't matter to us. The fact is it exists. So then it just comes down to, is it valid? And so for me, well, it's like,
yeah, I guess to me what it speaks to is if we think about like Adnan for a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we think about Asia, if there was no indication that Asia came forward at the time, and there was suddenly an indication that Asia came forward 10 years later, that's much less strong than knowing that Asia came forward at the time, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So when I think about if we're retrying this and saying we're sure Jody is innocent, that's where I get a little hung up because there's so much vagueness with this timesheet, right? Because maybe the timesheet, I mean, because it sounds like McGinnis and other people went to the restaurant the next day, but there's no evidence that they got the timesheet then, right?
Right. Well, they never even documented that they talked to Sean or anybody that day.
Sean just says that they did, and so does Princella.
Right. Yeah, they both said that they were there. And kind of what it comes down to me with the timesheet is,
yeah,
do I have a reason to doubt it? And so, and despite, you know, there are people that assume that I'm just like, I've always got my mind made up, I'm completely biased. And that's,
yeah, no,
that's
I don't,
truly not the case. It's,
no,
okay, I never question that. I'm like, well, there's the timesheet, there it is. Until some people, which that's why I always say,
yeah,
believe it or not, I appreciate people to push back because I'm like, okay, well, is there a question of the validity of the timesheet? Could there be? Because at first it didn't occur, like, why would it occur that it was? There's a timesheet in the prosecutor's file, right? So then I go back and I start looking at the statements and the testimony, and it's like, Cornelia says they left around midnight. Sean says they left around midnight. Princella says she was there at 11 o'clock and they were still work to do. So it's like everything lines, like all the evidence we have says that they left around midnight. And then we have this timesheet that says they clocked out at 12:05. So right, like it doesn't leave me with a re, like I'm struggling to find a reason to doubt the validity of it.
I think what matters about it to me is, and maybe this won't matter for, like you said, for actual innocence, but did White have that and still stipulate to the wrong time for the crime? Or did White and McGinnis not have that for whatever reason? Because it sort of looks like McGinnis didn't have it either by the time of trial.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. This is my own speculation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk about this. The idea, I am convinced, I'm not saying this is 100% fact, but I am convinced that they absolutely documented this crime to happen later than it actually did. And I believe that based on all the reasons I'm sure we'll get into, I've discussed them before. That's what leads me to believe that McGinnis did have this. At the very least, he knew from Sean, on that day that Jody didn't leave till 12. So, to me, there has to be a reason. Why would you make it 12:04? Like, if I'm right, let's just say, if I'm right, and it happened at 11:45, right, and then McGinnis changed it to 12:40, then I'm looking at, there has to be a reason. Why would he do that? Would he move it?
For sure.
And to me, this is an obvious answer to that. Well, because he knows that Jody didn't leave work till 12, so it couldn't have been 11:45, so they just push it back.
Yeah, no, and if it's 11:45, Jody, I'm with you on that. I'm fine with 12:05. I don't fully buy, just from knowing my own ability, like, some people are excellent at guessing time. Like, there are these people out there, I don't know if you met them, that you, like, walk up to them and they haven't seen a clock in hours, and they're like, it's 3:22, you know? I'm not those people. So I know that I have had arguments with people where I was like, I was arguing with that person on the phone for an hour. And then I look at the call log and it's like 4 minutes, right? Because I'm like heated and I'm like, oh, this is such a big giant deal, right? So I know I can't estimate time at all. So I don't think anybody who worked with Jody is necessarily purposely covering or exaggerating the time. I just don't know that the drinking wasn't included in the 12:05. And that the 20-minute conversation was, I mean, it's going to be a couple minutes at least, but is it 20? Is the fight with the girlfriend really, I don't feel like there are any real anchors there for me.
Yeah. So, by the way, my personal belief is that the drinking after work is included. I think, like, when Sean was like, because Sean didn't really remember specifically, but remember, he's like, I'm not going to be like, you got to go clock out right now.
Right.
He said he could have been
generous about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So my assumption is, that's based on Cornelius and Sean's testimony about the time they left, is probably 12:05 is probably after the drinking happened.
Right.
So that's probably when they're like, all right, we're leaving, we're going home, we're clocked out, let's go, which puts Jody home at 12:10, 12:12, something like that, when they first get there and then start having the conversation.
Right. So I'm not sure that it's possible with the timeline, but I also don't think it would be premeditated if Jody did do it. So one of your points was, Mario wasn't even at their own house. How would you locate them, right? My, I guess, question is, how do we know Jody didn't go out again for some completely different reason, runs across the person that they just recently robbed? That person is obviously unhappy and it escalates.
Which is a possibility for sure. But as you pointed out at the beginning, that's another reason why, if there's a world where Jody's guilty, it's not the way the prosecution had made it.
No, 100%. And that's why I just worry about saying, I don't feel sure it didn't happen, right? So it certainly didn't happen the way they said, 100%, right? But I guess I don't feel like I know enough about, the whole thing about Mario was trying to meet up with somebody about something. We don't know what, we don't know why. Potentially Jody thought they were meeting with somebody other than Mario. Mario thought they were meeting with somebody other than Jody. And then they run across each other and there's it would all be speculation. But I guess the fact that Mario's not at their own address doesn't feel like a total game changer to me.
Yeah, and I agree with that if we're looking at from the perspective where we're throwing out the prosecutor, because their entire narrative is Jody sought Mario out to silence them for this thing. So if we throw that out, as you I think accurately said, it would be complete speculation. There's really no evidence to support it, but it would be then it's just Jody got home, got in their car, drove around, and then was like, oh, look, here, there's Mario.
Right.
And then pulled around and then went and...
Or Jody's, you know, meeting somebody for another purpose and doesn't know it's Mario. Like, Mario, it's supposed to be somebody else, and they're like, hey, Mario, can you go instead? And then it, you know? I mean, again, speculation. But if we're thinking about, like, you were doing the closing for the defense as if you were the defense, right?
Right.
So I'm kind of taking it from that same perspective of, like, if I was the prosecution, how would I attempt to prosecute this? Which is not at all how they did, you know?
Right. Or to rebut what I said, because you would have the rebuttal after me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that would be a good strategy to that, is to say, well, it could have been this. I think they would have run the risk at that point of the jury recognizing, like, wait a minute, you just spent a week telling me that this was all premeditated. Now you're saying that it wasn't once we have this thing. I do want to circle real quick, because I do.
Yeah.
I tried to, for some reason, StreamYard's not letting me share the screen, but I do have the timesheet up on my other screen over here. Because you were asking about the clock. So Jody clocked, according to this, Jody clocked in at 10 a.m. They clocked out at 4:30 p.m. and then back in at 7 p.m. and then out at 12:05 a.m. So it was in, out. So it would have been like they clocked out at 4:30 to go to the 5 o'clock anger management thing. And then at 6:30 or whenever comes back, and at 7 clocks back in.
Yeah. So I think part of what, maybe part of, because I also brought it up from the website, maybe part of what confused people too was that the Sunday prior that's listed under Sunday, and it's just like the pay week didn't cycle the same as the calendar week.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's where people were at. They're like, well, because that was the first thing people said was, well, this has to be fake because they have hours for Sunday, but Jody was arrested on Saturday. But as you said, like it says at the top, it's for the week that ended on the 17th. Which was Saturday.
Okay. Which was Saturday. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that Sunday is the previous Sunday.
Okay. So I think the people were also, but now that I look at the math, it sounds basically right that 10 to 4:30 and 7 to 12. I mean, you don't have to pay somebody overtime if they're not working. You know, somebody can work 12 hours in a day and it's not overtime if they're off the other days, but a generous employer could call that overtime in that final box.
Right. And I suspect just from, you know, when I was working around that time, I worked construction.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a boss that would do stuff like that, would be like, hey, if he's asking me to stay late, he's like, I'll pay time and a half for, for this time.
So that makes more sense. I don't now remember why I was confused by that. So thank you. Mm-hmm. That's good. So the other part that I'm really hung up on is this thing about telling McGann they were asleep, or telling whoever they were asleep as they're, when they're interviewed.
Telling McGinnis when Jody told McGinnis.
Right. Yeah. So that's just weird to me, right? Like, their girlfriend woke them up and said, hey, this person's been killed. So they know it's before their girlfriend told them. Why do you assume it happened in the last? Like, if somebody woke me up and told me that, I would be like, oh, it took a minute for them to find that out. That didn't happen in the last 10 minutes, right?
Like, to me, that's one of the things that, and it's just a perspective thing, one of the things that leans me even more towards Jody being innocent is what I'm picturing is, so Jody gets home at, you know, they're home at 12:30 and they're in there and they go to bed or whatever, 12:45.
Right.
And then she leaves, Jody's sound asleep, and then at 3 a.m. gets woke up and she's like, I just came from this house and somebody just shot Mario. Because remember, when she got there, crime scene tapes up, everybody's out front, right? And so it, in my mind, if she just, at 3 a.m, she just came from there and the police are there and it's taped off, I would assume that it happened sometime recently. And I've been asleep for 3 hours, you know what I mean? So like, that would make sense. Like in my mind, without like really trying to think through it, it'd been like, I would assume that it probably happened sometime even in the last hour or two is when it probably, you would think that it happened. That at least makes sense to me.
I guess this is all speculation, but it's just like, you know, if yesterday I was at work for 10 hours and then I slept for really like an hour and a half and somebody was like, hey, this thing happened that you missed. Like, it's just, it just feels weird to me that you would assume that to me, and this is speculative, but that feels like knowledge, right? Because it feels like, oh, I kind of know when this happened. When do I push it to? Right? Because it's such a small part of that time window.
Yeah. And again, this is all going to be everybody's own perspective and speculation.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. I think to me, the idea that that at whatever, 3 a.m, she tells him, like, I just came from the crime scene and somebody just shot Mario.
Right.
That in my mind, it just happened sometime recently. I don't know. I've been asleep for a long time.
But it's like, all these things happened. I don't know. It just feels really strange to me. Like, why didn't you say, oh, was that while we were arguing? Like, there are 1,000 things that happened to this person in the last, like, their day got busier in the time frame that they are trying to stick it in, sort of. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I exactly follow you, but I think that anybody, like everybody's going to have their own feelings on that.
Yeah, for sure. It just felt to me like you have a big chunk of time when you were at work, a giant chunk of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you supposedly don't know anything about this. And then you have a small chunk of time and you're slotting it in the small chunk of time.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Without asking, like, well, when do we think this happened? Like, if somebody pulled me into a police station right now and was like, when was somebody killed yesterday? I'd be like, yesterday is 24 hours. Like, what are you talking about? I wouldn't be like, oh, I was eating a pancake, right? Because like that is a specific tiny portion of my day. I would need to know, like, what is my alibi? Where was I? I don't know anything about this. You see?
Yeah, I think that. So I where I come from with it is. Yeah. So when Jody's at work, if we have an innocent Jody, right?
Right.
Literally knows nothing about this thing.
Right.
Doesn't even know Mario. We know that. Like, right. They're not, like, they might know who Mario is, but they're not friends with Mario.
Right.
And when they leave work, everything's normal. They get home, everything's normal.
Right.
When they go to bed, Sherelle's there, if we believe Sherelle's still there, right? And then Sherelle leaves, right. And they go to sleep. And then a few hours later, in their mind, nothing's happened in this window of time. They haven't heard about anything happening, nothing like that.
Right.
Then they go to sleep. Then 3 hours later, they get woke up and told, you know, because we also don't know, you know, what did Sherelle say? Did she come in and say, hey, I just came from over at the Miles house and that right. Mario guy was just shot. You know, did she say he was just shot and killed? Like, and they're saying you did it. And it's like, what do you mean?
Right.
I was right here sleeping. What are you talking about? You know, I don't think that if there's, I don't think Jody at that point, I don't think anybody at that point would have been thinking like, oh, well, I need to know exactly when this thing happened.
No,
because I think your assumption would be that it just happened while I was sleeping.
Yeah, and that part, if they just base it off Sherelle, that in their mind, that I get. But one of the arguments against me has been, well, McGinnis didn't give them a time. It could have been any time. Well, if McGinnis didn't give you a time, why would you pick a time? How would you pick a time if you don't have that information? Maybe you pick it off Sherelle. But it seems like you would want to know, and maybe Jody just didn't think of this in the moment, but you would want to know either way, if you're guilty or you're innocent, you would want to know when do the police think this happened? Because that's when you need an alibi, not when it really happened, right?
Right. Yeah. I think for me,
well, maybe McGinnis didn't tell them the time. Well, or maybe McGinnis told them it was 1 a.m. Well, McGinnis didn't tell them it was 1 a.m. when we know they were sleeping because McGinnis had already interviewed people by 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So either McGinnis said no time at all, or McGinnis said something vague that led them to think it was after it could have been.
Right. Well, and McGinnis, it could have been as simple as McGinnis saying, Jody has, Sherelle comes home at 3 a.m, and that part is confirmed by Nadia, that the two of them come home, they wake Jody up, Jody's naked in bed sleeping,
right.
And they say, hey, Mario was killed, and they just came from there. So, maybe they have in their mind it happened shortly before that. And then after that, McGinnis just says, where were you at last night when Mario got killed? And if they have in their mind, to me, I would be more suspicious. And all of it is just statement analysis stuff. But I would be more suspicious if Jody got woke up at 3 a.m. and told Mario just got killed. And then McGinnis said, where were you at last night when Mario got killed? And Jody was like, well, I was at work until midnight. Why would you assume it happened then when there was no indication that anything had happened at that point? It's a small city. It was a couple blocks away from where Jody worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like you would think word would already be getting around if something, if it happened while Jody was at work. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Yeah, I guess the point I really don't agree with is the people who say McGinnis probably told them it happened at 1 a.m. Because either McGinnis changed the time. McGinnis didn't change the time to Jody, right?
Right.
McGinnis changed the time to the jury.
Right. Well, I mean,
McGinnis changed the time. I mean, McGinnis either. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm not saying this clearly, but like,
no, you are, and I think I'm catching up too. This is not necessarily about our conversation, but conversations people on like Facebook are having with you, pushing back against that,
right?
And I don't think it's I don't think anybody should be having a strong opinion about what McGinnis said in there because we don't know,
and McGinnis isn't going to make it 1 a.m. the next day because the next day McGinnis knows I was interviewing people at 12:30, right? The only way McGinnis pulls off making it 1 a.m. is waiting a year and introducing that at trial.
Well, it was in the newspaper that next day that it was 12:40, which we'll get into the right. Time change stuff.
Right. So McGinnis isn't going to say to Jody, where were you at 1:30 a.m.? Because I need to change the murder to really, really late because McGinnis knows there's too much for that, right?
Right.
I guess that's what it comes down to for me. But
sure.
I mean, as I said in our other conversation, I 100% agree that's not the same jacket.
Right.
There's no way that's the same jacket. I don't even care about sports, and I remember those jackets.
You're not going to describe that jacket as black with a gray stripe.
Nope, not at all. The DNA is a concern, right? I mean, mm-hmm. That's concerning if somebody who's would be likely to do this is on that bullet and not Jody. And I don't think that. I mean, I think the whole thing about seeing through the plastic is, I mean, we know why that happened. That was just, we're going to pressure you until you say what we need. So
with Victoria saying.
Yeah, Victoria. I'm totally on board with like Victoria just perjured herself under Precious and pressure. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah. And I think Princella is very convincing and above board. And so I don't think Jody left at like 11:15, right? Which seems mm-hmm. like it would be necessary if it's 11:45. But I guess I'm not fully clear on why it's 11:45.
So, I mean, 11:45 is an estimate. And this is where I get frustrated, not from you, but from other folks who have like argued about this, is there are people that act as though it is an insane tinfoil hat conspiracy theory to think this crime happened before midnight. And so I lay out like these are the reasons why there's several. The biggest one is that McKinney documents in his report the exact time he was called, midnight. Right. And that was I could be on board with, okay, maybe that's a typo. If mm-hmm. he didn't then say, then I got there, I was briefed, I looked at the outside of the scene, I talked to people outside, then at 12:30 I went in and talked to Victoria. Like it's, the times line up with he was called at midnight.
Right.
Then you have Victoria. And I didn't really think so much about this until I was doing that closing argument, how significant that was.
Yeah.
So he's interviewing her at 12:30. This thing just happened. I mean, it just happened.
Yeah.
And she was watching TV. So like as far as like anchors and times, like, you know, when certain shows, this is not like now where everything's streaming, like shows start at certain times.
Right.
And she says it was like 11 o'clock. Mario got there. He was there for 45 minutes. And then the shooting happened. And she then talks to McGinnis a little while later, another interview. She says about 30 minutes. In any case, so, you know, she's saying, and she is the moment that she was just there.
Yeah.
It just happened. And Mario got there at 11. And at between 11:30 and 11:45, the shots happened. Again, lines up with what McKinney said. Then you have James Blackwell, which he was interviewed a couple months later. So that if it was just James Blackwell, I wouldn't be so sold on it. Yeah. But when you add it to everything else, James Blackwell says he left here around 11. And at 11:45, I heard the shots. You know, that was stuck in his mind, too.
Yeah.
And we have Dewan James, who gets off work at 11, 5 minutes away, says he went straight to the scene. Now, of course, nobody ever asked him, you know, well, how long did you wait? But it seemed, but he said he was sitting there waiting for his cousin. It seems unreasonable to me. And this part is just speculation. But when we add it in with everything else, he doesn't say, you know, I was sitting there for an hour and a half waiting for.
An hour and a half feels different than 10 minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, that seemed to line up with a before midnight murder.
Yeah.
Even Lenny Williams. And that was the one that, and I don't know what, and that's one of the things where I'm like, I use the term handcuffed, but I'm kind of like handcuffed by the fact that because the AG's working on it, I can't go do what I normally do now, which is like, go find Lenny Williams. But I had done, you know, where Lenny said, originally says he got off work second shift, went home, got in the bathtub, was in the bathtub for a little while, heard the shots. At trial says I got off work at midnight. And then, so then all of a sudden everything lined up with this 12:40 time. But all it took for me was to make a couple phone calls to figure out. Coloma Frozen Foods was not doing any overtime at that time. Second shift ended at 11.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't have his time sheet.
Right. Sure. That's okay.
But it was like, so, okay, he had to get off at 11, which puts his time at around 11:45 when he would have been in the bathtub. So it's literally all signs point to, including the most damning one, is McKinney being called at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
All signs point to this thing happened sometime before midnight. Again, my estimation, just based on like emergency response, how I know how these calls go. They get the initial call. They get there. They realize it's a homicide. Everybody shows up. Then they call the detective. Like 15 minutes is about reasonable for me for that to happen. So 11:45, which aligns up with Victoria and with, you know, all this other evidence. So, I mean, I think it's still fair to say, well, I still don't buy it, but I don't think it's fair to say that's a ridiculous conspiracy theory. No, that's literally all the evidence says.
I don't think that is what I found confusing might be a better word for it was all the stuff about the tapes and the timing. And so, you know, like everybody, I just wish we had the EMS calls, right? Like why we don't have that is
well, that's the other piece of it, right? Is
right.
You have all of this evidence pointing to 11:45. They say it's 12:40. And then it's like, well, show me the dispatch logs. Oh, they never got them. Where's the tape? The tape was destroyed.
Right, exactly.
Where's the EMS report? Not included in the file. Like all of these things that are out there. And now I've been still trying to find any way to. So I FOIA'd from Benton Harbor because it's open investigation, they won't give me anything in this case. I said, well, just give me a list of all dispatches for this 2-day period. And they're like, oh, we don't have dispatch information anymore, but here's our run sheet, which just has the report, the part they wrote on the report, which says it happened at 12:40.
Okay.
So then I was like, okay, well, give me all your, because they had their own dispatch center. Give me the same thing for fire.
Right.
We don't have it for fire. What do you mean you don't? And the reason for that is because McKee, the crime scene investigator, said he was en route to a fire call when they called him to go to that scene. So I'm like, okay, give me the fire. They're claiming, I'm sorry, I don't believe that for 1 second.
No.
Because I know how it's called INFIRS, the NFIRS, the database where you send in you have to send in your fire reports. Those exist. And they're in the same system.
The number of unknown fires that you run across in record requests just seems disproportional, right? Like, didn't the West Memphis 3 claim that there was a fire that there was no documentation of that destroyed everything? Like, that's just a very... Seems like
Mara Leverett files a FOIA request for the fire department records from 1993 and got them like that. But now Benton Harbor is claiming who was the same.
Fires seem like a big strategy with these departments for sure.
Yeah. But in this one, the thing is they're now claiming to me They have no record of, they have no fire department records from that time frame. It's literally in the same, and I've talked to people that worked, the people that were in charge, people that worked in dispatch at that time who have told me, that's bullshit. It's the same, I showed them what they sent me for police.
Yeah.
They said they have that exact same information for fire, and they're telling you they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think they're still trying, to, in my opinion, to hide from anything that can show that they lied about that time.
Yeah.
But what are your, I guess I never asked you this, what are your feelings about the time of the murder? Do you have an opinion when you think it happened?
I guess I tend to think it's certainly before 1240, but I wonder if there's a sliver in there between 1205 where it's feasible.
I think that if it was, I mean, it would almost have to be 1240. Because then you have the ride home, some conversation with Cornelius.
There was something at 1230, right? Somebody who was at the scene or... There was some kind of anchor at 1230.
McKinney said he was interviewing Victoria at 1230.
Right. So it's got to be before 1230.
Right. But he also said he was called to the murder at 12.
See, that part I had forgotten. So that is helpful to have in mind.
Yeah, it's in the same report.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, his timeline and his report is, I was called at midnight. I got there. I was briefed by Officer London. He surveyed the scene, talked to the people on the scene, like Victoria and Carvale and Andre, who were there. Then at 1230, did a formal interview with Victoria, is what his report says.
So really, it seems like the only way this happens is if the 1205 is extra generosity, right?
Right.
And the 1230, the 12 o'clock is earlier than it really happened.
Yeah, you would, in order to believe... I think, like, in order to believe that this, to me, for that it was possible for Jody to have been there, we have to believe that Princella, I guess there's some room there because, right, she said she left at a few minutes after 11. And she says there was still a lot of work to do, but whatever.
Yeah.
But you have to believe that Sean and Cornelius are both wrong, or I'll say wrong because I don't think anybody thinks
they're
lying.
No, I don't think
they're
lying.
They had to be wrong when they said they left around midnight.
Right.
The timesheet has to be inaccurate so that they had to leave earlier than that.
Yeah.
And then you have to have Victoria was wrong when she said it happened at between 11:30 and 11:45. McKinney was wrong on his both spots on his time on his report where he said that he was called at midnight and that he interviewed Victoria at 12:30. All the stuff that
12:30 is okay. Right? Because be it?
Well, he's saying he interviewed her at 12:30, but like that's the same report. Like if you take away the fact that he says that he called at midnight, if we're just looking at he's interviewing Victoria at 12:30, if we can look through his narrative, like what did he do before that? He talked to Victoria, or he talked to Glenda, he talked to Carvale, he talked to Andre, he was briefed by London, he was like all these things back us up pretty close to he got to the scene around midnight. So it's like you have to believe that all of those things are all wrong in order to believe that the crime happened late enough and Jody got off work early enough.
Right.
In order for them to have been there. And that's why like it's like there's all this confusion, right? All these people are lying. There's all this nonsense going on. Yeah. So much with the robbery, all that. So for me, I was looking at like, okay, when did it happen? When's the earliest Jody could have been there? In my opinion, the conclusion I've landed on is it probably happened about 12:45 or 11:45. And I think the earliest Jody could have possibly been there would have been 12:30 to 12:40.
Yeah.
And so when I'm saying like I have such full confidence that Jody didn't do it, that's essentially where that comes from.
Yeah.
And then it comes to like you mentioned like the bullet casing. Like I'm baffled by the folks that are able to say, oh, well, we have the DNA. I mean, how crazy is this, right? So they have this DNA, and you know, by trial they're saying we just don't know who it is. Could have been the manufacturer of the bullet, blah, 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 blah. Then they run it through a national database.
He got out of prison and he got a job in a bullet factory.
Right, yeah.
Come on.
But then like years later, they run it through a national database with millions of people in it.
Yeah.
And it comes back to a dude with gun charges that lived two blocks away at the time that was arrested for gun charges 2 months later.
Because of his job at the bullet factory, Bob.
Obviously. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like.
No, I got you.
And it's like to me to believe that there's any possibility of Joe, even if you take away the timing stuff of it.
Yeah.
Like, here we go. We have actual evidence here of this bullet. Okay. If Jody's involved, you have to show me how is Jody connected to this Andrew Wayne Bell dude? Like, somebody has to. And that was from folks that I've talked to, that as I say, the important people that are, you know, outside of like podcast hosts and podcast listeners, but people that are working in the system.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that it was, who the fuck is this guy? Was the exact word I got. And like, why is he's never been interviewed? He's never been interrogated about. He's never been investigated.
Yeah.
There's no connection between them. Like, that's hard to get past.
Yeah.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
No, I mean, I think the 12 o'clock I had forgotten about, and that's really persuasive. I guess the other kind of just emotional reaction I had to the whole thing was like, just that people can be good people. There can be corruption, and they can be innocent or not innocent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the problem with a corrupt department is they're not only being corrupt about when they're, like, they're not going to be perfect, right? So they're just corrupt. So I guess I wanted to make sure that you knew that I don't think you have to be like, McGinnis is an angel. There's no corruption. This is all, right? Like, I think the whole department sounds like a mess. You had that guy on who had been an officer, right? And, you know, it can all be a mess and they can be right or wrong, right?
And the robbery is a perfect example of that,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, I fully believe, I think I would almost say indisputable that Sturgis completely lied about his identification of Jody. Mm-hmm. They made up all this bullshit about it. It was corrupt, it was lies. But also, they were right.
Right. Just by chance. Sometimes they're right, you know?
In the modern day, we just had this discussion last week with the Richard Allen case, with the Delphi trial. I don't know if Richard Allen's guilty or innocent, but there is a world that exists where they did all this shady stuff, have this weak case, and there's the corruption and all the things we've talked about.
Right.
There's a world where all that can be true and Richard Allen still be the guy.
Absolutely. Same thing you've said, and I agree with you with making him a murderer, right?
Yeah.
They could be a corrupt AF, and he can still have done it or not done it. I can't tell, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I guess and then, too, I just think the reactions to living in this situation just vary a lot, right? And so I also, this is kind of a silly story, but at work the other day, I got called in because somebody's electric was off. And I was like, oh, you know, this is how you apply to the county assistance office to get the funding to get your electric back on. They told me it was off for 2 months. And the guy goes, oh, no. I know all that. I've heard if you don't pay for something for 7 years, then you don't have to pay it. And I was like, cool, but what are you going to do for electric for the next 6 years and 10 months?
Right.
And he's like, oh, it's not mine that went off 2 months ago. It's my next door neighbor's. Mine went off 7 years ago. Then I got up on the lines and ran myself a line, right? Uh-huh. And now I've racked up his bill so far that his is off. So that's the real problem I'm having. And also her husband's mad at me. And I was like, yeah, I think that you're his. So you climbed a ladder right. And attached your own personal line off a live line, right? To you, that made more sense than once a year going to the county assistance office and getting them to catch your bill up. Like, to me, that makes no sense at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in a system where things don't work, and that makes just as much, like, he was like, oh, my friend did it, and he didn't pay $30,000. So I thought that was cool, so I thought I would do it too, right? And like, also, obviously, the solution is you have another neighbor, right? Just like, go do this again. But I didn't say that.
Right.
So like, the point is, I think people have different reactions. And when you're outside of it, it's easy to say like, oh, a good person would pay their electric bill, or a good person would use the free assistance, and a like weird person gets up on a ladder and like risks electrocuting themselves to like, right? But like, the whole system is so different than what a lot of us have lived in prior.
Yeah.
It does make equal sense in people's minds, right?
Well, I think that it seems like kind of what you're getting at is the idea to, or at least the way I'm relating that to this, yeah, is, for example, like everybody carrying a gun.
Right.
That, like, that seems bananas to me, the amount of gun violence that happens there. And mm-hmm. like, even like Jody having that gun and Mario having that shotgun and all this stuff going on. It's like, but we don't live in that world where that line of what's okay and what's not okay is just very different in that world.
And there's different reactions to that world, right? So in a sense, I'm living in that world because I live on this block, but everybody thinks it's bizarre I live there here. So people are constantly checking on me and like paying attention for me in a way that people aren't on other blocks. So people will stop by and say, why do you have a chair on your porch that's going to get stolen? And I'm like, I don't care if it's stolen. I want a chair on my porch. And then people are like, you're weird, you know? And then my chair hasn't gotten stolen. So like, there's also just like culturally how you're supposed to navigate it versus, so point being, right? Jody, I think Jody's probably a great person, right? And I don't think that means they did or didn't do the robbery or the murder.
Right.
So yeah. I just want those distinguished too.
Well, and that's I'm glad you said that because I've had that thrown at me sometimes too. It's like, well, Jody's a bad person because they held the gun to Mario's head. They did.
Right.
But where I'm coming from is like, that's not my job to determine. My job to determine is, did Jody murder Mario Lowe's? And if they didn't, then the person who did murder Mario Lowe's needs to go to prison.
Absolutely.
And what I have come to the conclusion of is, I do not believe Jody did this, which means the person that did do it hasn't been brought to justice. And we need to correct that. And that's as simple as that. Jody could be the worst person in the world or the best person in the world. It literally doesn't matter to me. Like, to me, this is all about the case. Right. And it also comes down to that very first conversation I had when I went into the city and I talked to Angelique Bell and realized the way the people in the community feel they're being treated by this police department. And then when we start digging into this and seeing the types of things that I think happened here, like, that needs to be corrected as well. If everything I believe McGinnis did is true, then McGinnis needs to be removed from that office.
Yeah.
McGinnis needs to go 100%. To jail himself. And they need to get somebody in there who's actually going to support, serve, and protect the people of Benton Harbor. And that's very important to me. It's a bigger issue for me than just whether or not, because somebody said, is like, well, if Jody had been committed for the robbery, then they should have served so much time in prison anyway, so it doesn't matter. But matter.
No. That's fine. They could be prosecuted for the robbery. They cannot be prosecuted for something they didn't do. Absolutely.
Right.
At the time. I mean, I think the robbery has run out by now, but. Yeah, no, and I appreciate, you know, this whole season because I actually have a friend who is in prison over something that happened here that's remarkably similar. And he had said to me, oh, I didn't do it. And I was like, of course you say you didn't do it, right? Like, everybody didn't do it. And just looking back a bit, so I might get more info about that. And if it looks valid, send it in too. But I don't know. I just kind of went the route of like, I like you, you're still my friend, but they probably got it right, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking like, the evidence is pretty similar. Somebody claiming from a far distance, they saw you shooting a gun after another issue with that person, you know, and just, we don't know. So I think
Molly, I'm going to give you a minute here to, if you have any like final thoughts you want to share.
No, thank you.
I think this has been a fantastic discussion. I was going to kind of at the end of the conversation, ask you, like, how do you feel the guilt? But I really don't think it matters, to be honest with you. And if you want to share that, you can. But I think what was important is we were able to come on and discuss both sides of it, talk about the concerns that you have with it. And I think it's good to let that be out there and people to kind of mull that over and kind of come to their own conclusions about things.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, this McKinney 12 thing, that's a problem that I had missed. So I need to go back and think about that for sure. So I appreciate the opportunity because I feel like on the Facebook, it just gets, like you said, so convoluted. So I feel much clearer on your position too.
Fantastic.
So thanks, Mom. Appreciate the opportunity to meet you too.
Yeah, you too. This has been great. I really appreciate you coming on, and those of you that have joined in the live. And this will air on Sunday. So everybody be hearing this on Sunday. And again, this will be our last episode before Christmas. So I hope you and everybody that celebrates Christmas has a great Christmas. And
you too, Bob.
Yeah, we'll be back after that. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. Co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.